I'm Blake Hardcastle. This is the Stories You've Missed podcast.
Welcome back to the podcast, Stories You've Missed. These are accounts of God's amazing grace in the lives of ordinary people at Grand Parkway Baptist Church. I'm your host, Blake Hardcastle, and I serve as a spiritual formation pastor at Grand Parkway. This podcast is designed to aid in the building up of this local body by retelling the kindness of God. My guests today are Tommy Hammer and Wade Burgess. Tommy's a native Houstonian who lived in Houston or Sugar Land his entire life. He started on the workforce in Burger King, but eventually settled in printing and has run his own business for 40 years. He's been married to Diana for 35 years, and they have 3 children and 5 grandchildren. They've been at Grand Parkway for 25 years, and actually they've visited on the 1-year anniversary of this church starting. He faithfully teaches a Sunday school class pretty much for 25 years, almost as soon as they began attending. Wade grew up in rural Louisiana, about 60 miles north of New Orleans, where I heard they say things like, "Who dat?" and "Go Tigers."
They do say that.
And he moved to Houston in 1994 to pursue a career in healthcare. In 2018, God moved him out of that and into pastoring, and he's been our executive pastor ever since then. He's been married to Amy for 27 years. They have 1 son who's currently in college, and they've been attending Grand Parkway since the fall of 1996. Wade has served in numerous roles at Grand Parkway, but one of his most favorite is the train conductor at the annual gingerbread breakfast. So welcome, Tommy and Wade, and today we're going to talk for a little bit about the story of Grand Parkway. Well, what has God done here? And I'm asking you two, because you guys have been here for almost all of it. And, you know, this church doesn't just appear out of nowhere. It really isn't the great engineering of man. It is God doing work through people. And the fact that it still is growing and flourishing decades later has been, I think it's a testimony to what God has done. So I want people to know what has happened. So let me just start off with, how did you guys know this was the church? You've been here decades, both of you. How did you know, okay, this is our church? This is the local body God wants us to be a part of.
Okay, so, as you mentioned, my wife and I came on the 1-year anniversary. We came with about 20 friends of ours who had left a previous church. We'd been looking for a sort of a New Testament style church, not just, I think most of us.
What do you mean by that?
Well, here's a little background. We left this previous church, like I said, with about 20 people. And for about 7 or 8 months, we were all sort of looking around. And during that time, I was actually teaching in my home once a month. We would have sort of an Acts 2:42, where we would come, we would eat together, I would teach for about 2 hours. So these are people that really are interested.
Christian hippies, pretty
yeah,
much.
Yeah, really. And then we would have prayer, and we would have fellowship, and then we would also have the Lord's Supper in our home, which is a very intimate thing to do in your home. Mm-hmm. And so we did that for about 7 months, and I was teaching on the New Testament church. Okay. I'd been reading a lot about it. I was very a little discouraged having left the church that Diane and I had actually been married in. Mm-hmm. It had really it was a bad situation.
Sure.
And so I was interested to see what God was doing. So I was reading all these books on, you know, the New Testament church, the two-winged church, all these things. And so all this little cadre of people we had, we were actually thinking about starting our own church.
Yeah.
And so there were myself and 2 other guys who both those guys had served on staff.
Okay.
And so we began to pray about it.
Yeah.
And God was never more silent than he was in those few months.
Okay.
And so it was very clear to me that...
And you didn't move ahead of him.
Right.
You didn't go, yeah, he's not saying no, so...
No, it was very clear to me that that's not what God had for me to do, that I was to continue to look. And we found this church, and when we got here, it just struck me that all the fellowship and the word was a real strong sermon the first day. And then... Of course, the thing that really cinched it for me was right after the sermon, a gentleman named Mark Millis, who was a member.
This is the first day you've come.
This is the first day. This is the 1-year anniversary. They're going to have a big barbecue afterwards. And so Mark Millis came up and presented the church with the gift of this first 6 acres of land that this church sits on right now.
The church is this time meeting across the street in Austin High School.
That's right.
Been around for a year. Went from kind of a big Bible study in a home to the middle school, now in the high school.
Exactly.
And one of the members has said, I've got land.
Here we go. It's free. And so, and for me, I was looking at like, you know, location, location, location. We've got a stoplight right in front of us. There's a school right in front of us. So I could very quickly begin to capture that vision of, even though we're called Grand Parkway and there was a vision out there from the pastor to have a church on the Grand Parkway, I began very quickly to see what God was doing here. And so I was excited about that.
Yeah. So elements of like fellowship, solid preaching, and God's doing something to where members are giving in significant ways.
Exactly.
And this marked you, this is the kind of church I want to be a part of.
Right. And I'll say one other thing, too, that happened pretty quickly. It took us about three months before we joined, but very quickly, because we didn't have anything but Sunday morning, I began to ask some of the people that I was getting to know, what else are you guys doing? And we had a small group of guys who wanted to start sort of a men's group. And we just met and began to do sort of Bible study in one guy's home. And I made like six or seven really strong friendships almost immediately with some men. And we didn't have a men's ministry or anything like that. Right. We actually started one after about a year. But it was just that sort of getting integrated with like-minded people who were seemed to be looking for the same thing.
Yeah. Wait, how did you and Amy decide, okay, this is a church?
Yeah, I was working in healthcare, and I had just started.
That mean like you're a doctor? Are you touching people? What kind of healthcare?
No, I'm not a doctor, but I'll take a look. No, I was a healthcare executive, that was my goal.
The doctors can't do anything without guys like you,
and I can't do anything without them. Okay. So we recognize the need for each other, if you will. I was working for someone who was going to Grand Parkway. And within the first week that I came to work, he said, "Where are you and your wife going to church?" I said, "Well, we really haven't found one. We just moved not long ago into this area." And he said, "Well, come on and go with us on Sunday." So I go home and I tell Amy, "Hey, we're going to have to go to church with this clown that I work for. And let's just go. We'll go once. We don't have to go back if we don't like it." And we didn't take two steps into the church before he found us. I was hoping just to sneak in, but he finds us, invites us to sit with he and his family, and that's actually where we sat every Sunday for the duration of the time that Grand Parkway was meeting in Austin High School.
How much longer did they meet in high school before you guys were over here?
We built this building and occupied it in July of 2000.
So about four years.
Yeah. So 4 years, you sit...
Same seats with the same people. And he not only invited us to church, he said, after we started attending for a little while, he said, "Wait, I teach a Sunday school class. I'd like you to teach with me." And so what that looked like at Austin High School is we'd go in every Sunday morning, you'd go into the cafeteria with those tables and you'd build your walls for the Sunday school classrooms. And, you know, you would set up every time, you would take down every time. And so those of us that did that were some of the first ones being proponents of, "We have got to build a building because I'm getting worn out here."
That's right.
We also, when we came that first Sunday, we were exposed to guitar and drums and some other things that we weren't used to in rural Louisiana in a Southern Baptist church.
In Louisiana?
Well, they have them. They just use them at the juke joints on Saturday night.
But on Sunday, Mardi Gras.
That's right. But on Sunday morning, we're only using the piano and at best an organ if you had one. And so we come here. I said, "Amy, I don't think we can handle the music at this church." She said, "Yeah, I'm not sure about that." But the peer pressure of me saying yes to my boss every Sunday, you know, he was asking every Friday, "Hey, see you Sunday, right?" "You bet, boss." Yeah. And so we just kept showing up.
Now, did you feel like he was playing a boss card? Or you think, no, he really...
No, he was genuinely interested in, I think, my spiritual development. Yeah. Yeah. As much as he was my career development, and I owed a lot of my career development to him and a lot of my spiritual development to him. In fact, he invited Jeff Wood. Jeff was a physician coming out of training, and I recruited him to the hospital that we were working at, and this person invited Jeff and said, "Jeff, we got a church we'd love for you to come." And now Jeff Wood's one of our elders here.
This guy's outreach-oriented.
Absolutely,
Or we might just say he's just being biblical. The Bible expects. Okay.
Exactly right. It wasn't long after our first Sunday that, in fact, I think we may have met Tommy and Diana there. They had invited us to just kind of a get together in someone's home and said, hey, we're going to have some hors d'oeuvres and want to get to know you and tell you a little bit about the vision for Grand Parkway. Well, man, we're not in that visitation area for no more than about 30 seconds. And somebody asked Amy, well, Amy, where did you go to college and what did you do? She said, well, I went to college on a drum scholarship. And they said, you know, we're looking for a drummer.
It's a sign.
Yeah. And so that started us every Sunday nearly with Amy playing the drums. Now, the drums is not the kit that you see now. It's this electronic drum thing on a stand. We would take it home every Sunday. Yep. She would practice throughout the week. We'd bring it back every Sunday morning, set up, and away we went. And so we quickly moved from, I don't think we can go here because of the music, to we got to go here because of the music, because she's driving the beat for this thing. We also, I think, you know, this is early on in our marriage. We're married 2 years or something. And every Sunday since we were married, my parents would call me and say, hey, did you go to church today? And we'd be like, no, I didn't go to church today. Didn't find one.
So a lot of those Sundays maybe, you had not gone to church.
Absolutely. And just hadn't really found what drew us and connected us.
Yeah.
We go to Grand Parkway that first Sunday. And I remember calling home saying, well, we went to church today. So mark us off for that, Dad.
Don't hassle us.
Yeah. But I don't know if we're going to stay. I don't know if we're going to be able to stay because of the music. I don't know that they're... every time my parents would visit Grand Parkway, my dad would lean over and whisper after the music was done, hey, is this really a Baptist church?
Now, was he joking or...
No, he was dead serious because he could not fathom that we would worship and praise with the instruments and the noise and all of that and it not be hymns only. Yeah. And so I say all of that to say God demonstrated some kindness to us early on. The first way he did it was he gave us an invitation to a church that would become really our church home for now 25 plus years. He did it in a way that answered the prayers of praying parents. And the reason I know they were praying for that is because I now am a parent. And I know how I'm praying for my son. And so I know what that looked like.
You have a reminder on your phone. Hey, don't forget to pray for Alex that he would connect to a church.
Absolutely right. And so that was an act of kindness on God's part early on in our marriage, connecting us to a faith community that was necessary for really our individual, but also for our collective spiritual development. The second thing that he did, I think, in showing kindness was... He demonstrated early on that if you're faithful, he will be faithful. We weren't here, I don't think it was a year or so, and they started a building campaign. And so, I don't know.
They got free land, but no free building.
Exactly. That's right. Exactly right. And I guess the 2 weeks leading up to it, Amy and I had been praying, God, how much do you want us to give, and what does that look like?
Do you remember what they were trying to raise? Like, what did the building cost back then?
Well, that's kind of an interesting story because I was serving in the advisory council at that moment and at that time, and we had hired a guy to start drawing up some plans. And so, you know, the first dump of what we want comes out at what we already know is way, way too much money. And then the second and the third, and we just could never get it down. And so ultimately we sort of settled in that we raised and got and maxed out our lending at about $1.2 million.
Okay.
And so as a result, we had to find sort of a design build guy who could give us a design and that was a whole process. And then the top floor of this building was not finished out at all. So it was concrete. And no air conditioning, no electricity.
No walls, just...
No walls.
Just beams and concrete.
But in July 2005, one thing it did have is it had my Bible study class up there. And I would go up there because I had a big class, and I went up there with three box fans and set a bunch of chairs out. And we had, for about 4 months, we had it that way until a bunch of guys got together and pitched in, and we did actually all the work ourselves. So... it was an interesting time, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, if necessity is the mother of invention, then the mother of getting a building fund off the ground is putting people upstairs in a hot room in the summer in Houston.
Or make, hey, you serve. Yeah. Okay, we can't serve anymore. This is too hard.
You just put the plate right by the door. You guys are walking out and dropping money in like crazy.
Exactly right. So we've got this building campaign.
Right.
And we get to church, and Amy, before she goes on stage,
and no
to
one's
play
against the, building a building. Everyone wants to do this.
Absolutely.
Let's get out of the school. Let's get her home. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And so before she goes on stage to play the drum, she says, well, do you have a number? And I said, no.
It's like your commitment to the building. Okay.
And so she goes, and they pass the offering plate. You're supposed to put your commitment in or your check in or whatever. And look, in 1996, we couldn't afford to pay attention, all right? And so we didn't have anything, and she comes back to her seat and she says, well, did you get a number? I said, well, I wrote a check. And she said, how much was it? And I told her, and she says, uh-oh. And by the way, it was not a very big number. The number didn't even have a comma in it. But we knew what we also had in our bank account.
It was still going to affect you.
Exactly. Yeah. And she said, okay, here's the kindness of God. He says, hey, if you will believe me and believe in who I am and what I say, I promise you I'm good to my word. We get home and she's like, man, how are we going to, what in the world did you do to us? And about 2 weeks
later. What do we got to give up now to make up for your number?
Exactly. And about 2 weeks later, we get our tax refund check in the mail and it's almost the exact same amount that we gave.
And that felt affirming.
Yeah, and that's not the philosophy I would give people to, you know, hey, just pick a number out of the air and let's see if God can give you a Mercedes Benz. But what I am saying is that God continued to show his kindness to us. Early on in the process, he said, here is a church that I want you to engage in and use your talents in. Here's a church that I want you to feel confident in tithes and offerings. And here's just a little bookmark of how faithful I'm going to be if you'll be faithful back. Tommy knew, he said he knew right off. He said, I knew the first day I was here.
It was love at first sight.
Exactly.
That's right.
And we didn't.
Yeah.
But God said, but this is where I want you. Blake, you maybe offline, you asked us, hey, but we understand what got you here, what kept you here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think Tommy and I both are cut from the same cloth. One reason is the generation that raised me believed in churchmen. Mm-hmm. That idea that you go to church not out of convenience, not the closest one to your house, not the one that played the songs you liked. You went to church because that was your church, and you stuck it out. You stayed there, and you committed to what was happening. And I didn't know it at the time that I was a churchman.
Okay.
But having gone through those early developmental things of being a churchman, if you will, that faithfulness in God returning my giving, that faithfulness of God putting me in community of believers, it made a difference, not just in me personally. It made a difference in our marriage. Mm-hmm. We went through some marriage recovery, and God did a work in and through us, through the people here. Tommy Hammer, in fact, is one of the main ones. And the pastors that were here at the time invested in me and invested in us. And that is what has kept me, not because I feel like I owe back, but because I want to pay forward what was done for me. And I love Grand Parkway and so glad that we're here.
It always seems the design of God's church is that he gives gifts to his people to then use to edify the believers in the local church. And so what you experienced seems very normative, that this is the way it's supposed to happen. And then using your gifts to edify the body.
I think the thing that Wade hit on there was the churchman thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that is normative in our culture, in our Christian culture that much anymore. I grew up in a church in downtown Houston, South Main Baptist Church, and I went there the first 28 years of my life. My mother went there her whole life, and my grandparents went there for most of their adult life.
Mm.
And so what I got to see there was generational things.
Yeah.
So now, I think now, I've been here a quarter of a century now.
Yeah.
And so I see things like, we just ordained Thomas Brown to be an elder in our church, who I have known since he was a teenager.
Okay.
And so now he's almost a 40-year-old man who is serving as one of our guiding leaders.
Yeah.
And so that to me is a great affirmation from God, yeah. because it's a historic affirmation for me to have seen that kind of thing in my childhood and in right. my parents and my grandparents, and now saying, hey, this church has been around long enough to where we can see it here too.
You know, the, and maybe you're mentioning, we're talking about is kind of the consumerism of church, where Christians kind of maybe come and dine for a little bit, but, you know, they don't stick and stay. Is that kind of thing where, you know, Thomas, who you first met as a teen, and now experience him as an elder, is that something you get to experience if you're just at a church for a couple, 2-3 years?
Yeah, you know, I don't think you do. And the other thing is, thinking about some of the things you asked us ahead of time, I was thinking about struggles in our church.
Yeah.
And so to me, there's two kinds of struggles. There's the kind of struggle that Wade talked about a minute ago when we're in the school and we're having to, you know, there's a cart comes in, you got to set everything out and it's wearing everybody out.
Yeah.
And those are good struggles because they give us a longing for the next thing. They also teach us things about character. And then there's struggles that are sort of corrective. And we went through that with a change in our leadership and changing sort of the vision of what the church was going to be. Because even though we had this land, our founding pastor, Dale Hill, and this is not a secret, he said publicly this was a stepping stone to what he felt was the vision of a big campus, kind of a mega church kind of thing. I think what we've seen here is that's not a bad vision. There's plenty of people that have done that successfully. That's not necessarily the vision that God had here.
It doesn't fit the culture God's creating at this location.
Right. And so so it's not like one's bad and one's good. Mm-hmm. It's just which one was the one that God had. And so some of the struggles that we had sort of in our midlife of a church are sort of corrective. And I think if you end up being one of those people that every time something happens that you don't like or it gets a little tough, you miss out on the corrective aspect of those struggles where you become, then you actually become, you sort of get sort of an accelerated maturity almost if you hang in there because you have to see some stuff that's not real pretty, but you recognize God's hand in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And I know we're going to talk about some pretty fantastic things God did too. if you don't stick around, you don't get to see those either.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The what are some of the fires or scars or wounds that God's brought this church through that if you look back and go, you know, at the time I thought, This is pretty awful, or this is pretty, you know, I don't like this. And now, you know, you probably have both forgotten about getting sweaty, setting up church, right? Now you kind of come in, why is the AC not working? So you forgot, but you know.
Well, I don't know. I went and helped move all those chairs the other day. I got pretty sweaty that day. We're still doing that. What's wrong with us?
Well, you know, but what deep water, what fire has he brought this church through?
I bet Tommy could speak more eloquently than I can on this, but the ones that I think about, and listen, Tommy makes a great point that if you don't stay in a place, a relationship, a career, you don't get to see all the good stuff.
Yeah.
And the good stuff is sweeter because of the things you went through.
It's like a balloon payment at the end. Exactly. And if you don't stay in it long enough, you're not going to get that harvest.
Right. Yeah. So I was not as engaged in Grand Parkway with all the details. And to your point, Blake, you kind of forget about that. Mm-hmm. You know, you forget a little bit of the pain after you've gone through it.
Coping mechanism.
Yeah, but, you know, the people that came before myself that were on staff here, they made impacts on Grand Parkway and its people. Each staff member had an impact on the church. The experience tells me that even those who might have underperformed or underachieved or whatever shaped Grand Parkway into what we see today. I think each person that served in a teaching role, a volunteer capacity, a committee, or an oversight had an impact on Grand Parkway's success. I think some of that fire, though, that those folks helped us navigate, and Tommy's one of those navigators. We had a school. One of the visions that the founding pastor had was that we would have a school here on our campus.
And like a Christian school?
Right.
Like elementary school?
Okay. Yeah. And so, well, if you're going to do it, then you're going to do it best you can. And the best we could was some mobile buildings here on the campus. And man, that was draining several resources.
So you had mobile buildings on campus. Okay.
Yeah. And so when we made an exchange of lead pastors, that had to go away. That was a lot of hard conversations that needed to happen. A lot of lives are affected by that.
Because you might have had church members who were attending.
Yeah, their kids were going to school there. Or maybe they were teaching at the school or whatever it is. And so those folks are saying, hey, I can't believe you're undoing something that we put together. Mm-hmm. But the vision that was given to those in leadership said, that's not what God's going to be about here at Grand Parkway. And so getting through that pain to see the benefit on the other side of that, I think that idea of exchanging lead pastors, Tommy talked about that just a minute, and man, that's a big pruning process. Mm-hmm. Tommy, I don't remember. I think we got down to 150 or so.
Yeah, for some reason, the 190 number sticks in my mind.
190?
But I mean, we were running up about...
What was your high water mark?
We were probably pushing 500 on a Sunday.
So you're in this facility.
400 to 500, yeah.
Two services at that point?
No, I think we were just doing
one. No, still one.
Okay. When we opened up this building, we bought 504 chairs. Okay. We put 20 on the stage because we had a choir at the time. So we had 484 possible chairs here, and it was mostly full on Sundays for the one service.
Okay.
And we got down to about 190, and then I think when Neil came on, and he'll tell you this, there's people that just, he was a little too radical for, too different, I guess, is from what they were used to. And so I think we got down to about the 150, and that was sort of where we bottomed out.
Okay.
And those 150 people stuck with us and said, we're going to give this a chance.
Yeah.
And I think... now I look at it, we're so much healthier now. And again, that's not to say anything bad about anybody that came before. It's just watching what God has corrected us in and in our faithfulness has begun to produce in the lives of people. And really bringing sort of a whole different kind of people here. The thing that I notice a lot, because I have spent a lot of time in the finances of our church, is that level of generosity of our people now before. It seems like for many years, you know, the first two or three years, we sort of doubled every year. And so we were doubling in people and doubling in money. And then we sort of hit a plateau and then began to kind of wane off a little bit where we were always behind. And then we brought the school in, which was a drain. Mm-hmm. Schools can be a good thing or a bad thing, but it's hard when you bring a school in when you're struggling as a church. Yeah. And so it was poorly timed, if you could say that for sure. And so now we see the fruit of what God's done is He's not only done many things around us, but He's done much inside of the people themselves to grow them up and mature them. And I think everybody that's been here through the thick and thin of it would tell you in their own lives that they're much more mature in their faith, much more mature in their giving. Much more mature in how they reach out to people in every way.
You remember when you know things were atrophying a little bit, dwindling, and you had this gap in leadership. You know, this church only had two pastors. In this day and age, that's actually a little rare to only have two pastors for 25, 26, 27 years. And so in this gap between the two pastors, do you remember ever having thoughts of, Lord, are we going to stay here? Is this the end of this thing? And what can you remember back that far? This is 15 years ago or something like that.
You know, I guess because I wasn't serving on our leadership board any longer at this time. But I was in touch with enough of them because I knew I sort of have gotten this reputation as like the church historian or something.
Oh, okay.
So people would, even on the council, would come and say, hey, do you remember when this happened? Do you remember when that happened? So I was sort of, I had been serving on the advisory council, been serving on the finance team, leading that, and then had stepped down from both of those. So I was basically just teaching. I had kind of needed a little, let me just do the one thing I know I'm good at and can get passionate out of. And so to me, when everything finally kind of blew up, it was almost like I took a deep breath, like, okay, we're now going to go on the way. Something's got to happen upwards because, you know, it just, that's about as bad as it can get sometimes, especially because I love Dale Hill and wish we were still you know, close and everything.
God had used him in your life in significant ways.
And he was...
And in the life of this church.
Yeah, when my mother-in-law died, when my father died, he ministered to us in a great way, and I will always appreciate that. And he was a great pastor.
Pastor.
I actually saw him a week ago at a funeral, and his sermon was great, you know, and I missed that, you know, but there's other aspects of his leadership that just, they were some problems, and I won't go any further than that, but to me, after that was kind of all happened, it was like, okay, kind of fresh start. Mm-hmm. Let's get this right. And especially when we got Neil on board, that was a big encouragement to me because I knew Neil for a while.
Okay.
He'd been a member of our church. He was actually in my Bible study class when he was not traveling.
Okay.
And so I had developed a
relationship. Was he behaved in that class?
You know, he almost never said a word.
Okay.
It was very interesting because, you know, he and I'd go to lunch or something and talk, and he's like, much like he is now, but he would sit in there with Marcy and he would almost never say a word. Hmm. Just very quiet and polite and listening. And every now and then I'd get an email from him. Hey, what was that reference you had on this? You know, I didn't know if he was trying to correct me or if he was inspired or just wondering, you know. But then when he became our pastor, then some of the gifts that we see now in him started really coming out. His pastor.
That wasn't prevalent as a attender of your class.
No, because he was in and out so much.
Yeah.
You know, he spent a good part of the year.
Sure, that's how he made a living was.
Yeah. And so we knew him and he would preach occasionally. Mm-hmm. You know, if Dale was going to be out of town or something, he would preach occasionally. So we knew him as a preacher, and we knew his reputation. He's pretty well known in the biz, you know, nationwide, pretty big name out there. And so we knew his reputation, but what we didn't know was how great a pastor he is, the intimate, personal side of him.
And the stage stuff, you had no concerns, platform,
right?
But the intimate pastoring, that's been a great surprise.
Yeah, and two. This shouldn't be a surprise, but I think it's maybe the first time we really got impacted by it was his ability to cast vision.
Mm-hmm.
I would say this, if I were going to compare the two pastors, both great men.
Yeah.
One of them had his plan that he wanted to work for God.
Mm-hmm.
And the one we have now is looking for God's plan and what God.
Yeah.
And so he has this vision for what I'm going to wait and hear what God has to say.
Yeah.
And not just say, I've got this preconceived formula, you know?
Yeah.
So,
Did you, now Neil has been the pastor since then.
Mm-hmm.
Did you think he'd last this long?
I actually feel fortunate that we've kept him this long.
Okay.
I know there are people.
You think he would outgrow us or?
No, I think my sense was that, somebody else is going to come and get him.
Okay.
And I know he gets those kind of calls regularly. In fact, when I was serving on the elders one time, he told us, he said there was a church up in Waco that was pressing him pretty hard and he was going to go up there and preach, not in view of a call, but just going to go preach. And we knew the elders knew that what that meant to us was he'll listen to God. If he gets up there and preaches and God says, this is the place, we knew that was going to be it. So we didn't feel pressured by that or anything. And we just said yes and amen to it if that's what God wants. And I think that's what the leadership does now is whatever God's going to do. But I feel fortunate that we've had him this long. Because you're right, it is a long time, to quarter of a century and you've had two guys.
It's really only a long time in our North American Christian culture. Mm. It isn't really a long time with respect to how the Bible talks about eldering and shepherding. Mm-hmm. You know, it's stick and stay for a lifetime usually.
Right.
Wade, did you think Neil was going to be the guy?
I didn't know. I didn't have the privilege of knowing Neil before coming on in that capacity the way Tommy did. And
his name is a tennis partner, right?
Yeah, we had played basketball a little bit. And I won't tell you who won or lost, but I had some bad teammates. But anyway, I didn't know him really that well. So I wasn't sure what to look for. In that time frame between the originating pastor leaving and Neil coming on, it never occurred to me that we were going to look anywhere else.
Hmm.
It never crossed my mind. We had made a commitment. We had burned our ships. We were committed to Grand Parkway. And so the question in my mind was, God, what are you doing next?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you want me to be used in that? And so when they brought Neil on, I began to understand, I think like a lot of folks did, what Tommy just said. This guy has been touched by the hand of God, in my mind, because of the talents and gifts that he has. His ability to write well and speak well and preach. His ability for that vision, that intimacy with God that was coming out through, hey, here's an idea. Hey, here's what I'm thinking about. Here's kind of what God's putting on my heart. I think that the longer someone is out of place, the more you take them for granted. Mm. And that will never change Neil's mind about his calling to this place. Mm-hmm. Now, could God call him tomorrow somewhere? Absolutely. And will he be obedient to that? Absolutely. If he believes God's in it. Mm-hmm. But he is not going to be dissuaded by anything else other than that. Mm-hmm. And so that gives me comfort and peace, but it also reminds me, hey, boy, it's real easy to misunderstand what he brings to the table. Let me say it like this, what God has blessed us with by bringing him to the table. And I think Grand Parkway is an example of God blesses the preaching and teaching of his word. So I think we've been really blessed to have him, and I look forward to however much longer we can do that.
Now we have four buildings currently on this campus. Now the second one that was built was the kids' building. Is that accurate?
It was the student building, the warehouse.
So that's the ones furthest down. Why did we build that? What did God do in that process? How did he make that happen?
Well, the big miracle to me, that is the land that we got.
Okay. So that wasn't part of the 6 acres you mentioned before.
No. So here's, I'll try and keep this as brief as possible. So we're sort of at the end of our founding pastor's time here. Like I said, his vision was always being somewhere else.
Okay. Being like on the Grand Parkway.
On the Grand Parkway. Yeah. And unfortunately, there's the whoever makes those decisions, they don't really want a church on the Parkway. And so we had actually put in a bid on some land that's actually at Mason Road and the Grand Parkway. It was owned by a real estate developer. We got all the way to the point of printing brochures for our finance campaign, and the guy yanked it from us.
Okay.
So our pastor, I think it struck me as kind of a panic move, understanding that we were sort of at that place in a church where our growth was being stymied by everybody being in this one place. I don't know why there was not any thought to having multiple services
at that time
we felt like,
and that may have not been popular at that time,
right, but we were at the point where we felt the need to do the next thing. But he went and sort of committed our church to 40 acres over here on Madden Road, which is sort of by where the Amazon building is.
Okay.
Raw land, wooded, with a big sand pit behind it. So we still had a lot of debt. We weren't really able to get very favorable loans. So we bought this land for, I want to say it's like $1.1 million on a 4-year note. So that's some steep payments. Mm-hmm. And we were very quickly, I think I remember about $200,000 short on our first two payments. So over a couple of years, we paid like $360,000 on that. But we were at the point where the bank was about to, I think they were about to pull it from us. Mm. And that was about the time that we made the change in the pastor. And so we began to look at that property and say, okay, this is no longer the vision, because the guy who had the idea wasn't here. So what are we going to do with that? So again, Mark Millis, who gave us the original land, he was no longer a member here, but he stepped in and helped us. And one of our, Owen Bement, one of our elders, got together, and they went and approached the developer of Aliana right next door.
Okay.
And ultimately what happened was we swapped that 40 acres for the 9 acres right next door.
It's adjacent to us.
Okay. Right. And so that was a value of about $360,000. And we ended up, on top of that, getting almost $100,000 cash given to us. So we looked at this like, okay, God just reached out into the muck
and rescued
us.
Pulled us out.
And gave us $100,000.
Pulled us out and shined us up.
Shined us up.
Gave us new clothes and some spending money.
It was one of those things where, and for me, I can remember years before, at one of our men's things, Dale had us all go out to stand at the edge of that property. There used to be a little barbed wire fence there at the edge of our
system. It was just barren land at that point.
It was, and it was owned by the prison, the state prison system, and just pray for it. And I can remember praying, and one of the few times in my life where I could say what I hear Neil say a lot of times, the Spirit was said to me, this is going to be ours. And I didn't really understand really what that meant, because at the same time, we were hearing things like, oh, the prison's never going to sell that land, blah, blah, blah. And so the inertia toward we better move to a bigger piece took on more because of things like that. But ultimately, that thing that God said to me in the prayer, I just he brought to fruition, and he did it in such a miraculous way.
More than you.
More than I could ask or imagine. You know, to quote a verse.
There. Yes.
I mean, it was like I could never imagine. And the thing was, we always thought that 40 acres with a sand pit behind it was a detriment. Mm-hmm. It turns out that's the value thing to Aliana, because they want to drain their water into it. Yeah. And so everything we thought was a negative, God took it and said,
God was superintending all along. Exactly. Even the things you thought, oh, maybe we made a bad decision here.
Exactly.
In his kindness.
Yeah.
In his abundant mercy.
And I'm not saying that we made a great decision and just didn't see it. I'm saying I still think we made a not wise decision, but God said, my intense passion for having a church here is so great, I'm going to overcome your questionable decisions. Yeah. And so he did, and he did it in such a fashion, and with the extra cash that we needed to pay down some debt, it was just like, God, that's a God thing. Mm. There's no doubt about it.
And so the next finance meeting, it's a sigh of relief.
We're throwing confetti in the air just with everything, you know, little noisemakers. Yeah, it's like New Year's Eve kind of. You know, all of a sudden it's like, okay, now we can begin to see that there is some momentum building up.
Yeah,
and then we were able to, you know, begin to build the.
And what was the need? Like what? You know, why did we build a student ministry building? Did we have plenty of students? What was happening in this facility that necessitated that?
What was happening was pool balls were dropping every Sunday.
I forgot about that.
From the second floor classroom where we had jammed about 40 kids in there. It smelled like Fritos, squirrels, and freedom or something. But they were playing pool up there, and you would hear those pool balls drop on that concrete floor.
Right in the middle of the sermon.
And
bounced a little bit.
Right. And so so we knew that, hey, every ministry here is important. It's vital to the success of what God, we believe what God wants to do. But moving the students out of this building needed to happen first so they could be students.
Yes.
And then when you do that, now we've got room for our children's ministry. Now we've got room for our adult ministry to grow, et cetera. And so the elders really did a nice job of master planning the campus.
So once you got the additional 11 acres, that what it was?
Nine.
So we had additional nine.
I think we have about 16 total.
The master plan of, here's what we think we want to do for the whole campus.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so, I mean, what happened was, and Tommy knows this story better than I do, but Mark Millis, who is a developer of high-end neighborhoods.
He's not a pastor, but he's someone who God has used in his own experience and position and gifting to minister to a church.
Yeah, absolutely.
So all you non-pastors part of our church listening, you have a potential to do a significant...
Oh, big time.
Absolutely. So he's developing Shiloh Estates, okay, these custom homes, and he gives land or sells land to the then Houstonian Golf Club, which is now Shadow Hawk, and he's doing all this. And he comes to the church and says, I'm going to donate 5 acres to you all. Well, as Tommy tells the story, his neighbor behind him says, hey, I really need that access. I need that frontage area exchanged. Mm-hmm. Would you guys do a swap with me? And could I get the back and y'all get the front? Well, now Grand Parkway is on the front. Now we're on 1464, right across from Austin High School, not hidden in the back of Shiloh Estates or something.
The first thing of dirt wasn't the front here.
I don't know if he actually thought about giving that land to the church.
Yeah.
I think he was that's just always been sort of a passion for him to be a part of being able to do that. And he's the person that's got resources.
Yeah.
And so I think he thought, well, it'll be one day I'll give a big check to a church. And it turns out he was able to actually give
raw
dirt.
Yeah. So out of a land swap, we get 5 acres where we put this original building, mm-hmm. where we currently have our sanctuary and our adult Bible studies. We then think buying 40 acres is the way to go. It's not. We then have another land swap where we get the 9 acres Tommy was talking about. Now we've got a 15-acre contiguous campus. Now we get the student building, and in 2014 we get our children's building, mm-hmm. and we are about a month away now, January of 2022, we're going to open a new sanctuary, all because we were able to have it all on one campus. Mm-hmm. Not just the location that happened, but as Tommy mentioned, this idea of fiscally responsible. Mm-hmm. How do we pay for this, and what does this look like? The leadership of Grand Parkway has always said we are going to have manageable debt, and that was exactly what we stuck to. We got this building paid, and then the student building, mm-hmm. and then
not
the kids' building.
Not overextending ourselves where
exactly.
if God doesn't do a miracle every month,
yeah,
we're
yeah.
in trouble.
And that allowed us to be debt-free when we began the building of the new sanctuary. Mm-hmm. And so this idea that God has shown kindness is all over mm-hmm. Grand Parkway and continues to be this theme throughout. I mean, who would have imagined? Well, it certainly wasn't Tommy, because he said, I couldn't have asked or imagined that we were going to swap out 40 for 9, yeah. get $100,000 on top of it, and still be right here where we are.
Yeah.
How many churches are going to last that long in, mm-hmm. in the fastest growing county in the state, mm-hmm. in one of the fastest mm-hmm. growing counties in the nation for a long time? Mm-hmm. And by the way, Blake, that also applies, I think, some pressure to Grand Parkway. If God wanted us to be here, and he's got a plan mm-hmm. for us here, how much more should we be doing mm-hmm. to minister to the area schools and the area people? And Aliana, a master plan
right
community
next to us, yeah.
built right next to us. Mm-hmm. We didn't have to do anything for that. Mm-hmm. How much more should we be outreaching and inviting? Mm-hmm. And it really is as simple as what got Tommy here and what got me here. A person-to-person mm-hmm. invitation that says, hey, where do you go to church? Mm-hmm. Would you like to come to Grand Parkway? That is what I think we're called to.
Yeah.
And that's all we have to do. And God says, I've got you right where I want you. Mm-hmm. And so go about what I've called you to.
When you think back you know, about things like the you know pool balls and falling and things like that, what are some things where you go, you know, this actually was a watershed. This is you know, why do we buy the kid? Why do we build the kids building? Like, how did that come to be? Where were our kids at that point?
I will say this, that and again, I was on the first elder group that we had. So mm-hmm. we spent the first month or so trying to get ourselves out from the financial mess that had been left with. But then once we began to turn our attention to, okay, now what? Mm-hmm. There was a big emphasis on, and noticeably, because we were seeing people who were coming were people, family members with kids. And so we began to think, okay, this is not a church like you see a lot of churches that are mostly seniors. They've been there for a long time, and they're having a hard time getting new growth in, new younger people. We mm-hmm. were, the people that were coming to visit were by and large a little bit younger. And so we started thinking, okay, we need to be thinking about having facilities and space for these kind of things, so that when people come here, they go, well, you know, we used to have all the kids over in the one of the halls over there, you know, in one of the what are now Bible study classrooms. Yeah. And so, you know, people walk in and they go, well, this looks okay, but is this your permanent situation?
Right.
And so we did this when we actually had the architect who did the work on our student building. At the same time, we asked him to do us a campus yeah. vision. And so we knew what that was, but we weren't at a place where we could really articulate it well, except by how we proceeded step by step. And so when we began to do the students and the children, it became very evident all of a sudden to the community that here's a church that's really focusing its attention on families. And of course, we're right here, as Wade said, we have this huge mm-hmm. master plan community over here. You know, it's interesting if you study, as I'm sure you have, how churches set out, you know, how they plant themselves. A lot of times you find these churches that are not able to afford anything inside, and so if they go outside the town, they have to kind of have people coming from long distance. Yeah. Well, we just kind of planted ourselves down here, and God just brought all the communities right around.
Built it around you. Yeah,
we didn't have to do a whole lot of marketing research or anything. So, and like I said, we're right in front of a stoplight. Mm-hmm. People have to stop and see us. And you compare to where we were thinking about being, where people would be blaring down the Grand Parkway at 60 miles an hour, looking in their rearview mirror would be the only little glimpse they would get of us. So we have the perfect situation here. But I think it's just our focus on that next generation that's coming up. And hopefully, like I mentioned earlier, they'll come in and they'll stick around long enough to see their kids raised in this church and then their kids raise their kids in this church. And I think that's the kind of thing that, you know, that I look at. I want Neil to do my funeral, you know, and I want to have my funeral here in this church. And so I want my kids to ultimately come to this church if they move back to town. And so I think that's the kind of thing that we're fostering in our people here.
If people stay, at a church, really our future elders and maybe even future pastors and Sunday school teachers, they're dropping pool balls on concrete floors. they're kids and teens running around here right now.
Exactly. Yeah. And we're starting to see that in some of our elders. We're seeing it in people that are coming back. You know, they've gone away for a while and they've come back with young families. Now, I saw a young lady in the hall just last week who I had, her mother used to come here with her, and I can remember when she was like 8 years old, and she's walking through the hallway with pulling three kids along and a husband. She says, I'll see you after the service. You know, I hadn't seen her in a long time. Yeah. So we have people that are coming back now. And we've had a lot of people that kind of, they left for a while and then they came back and they said, you know, we kind of got over the hurt of seeing a pastor leave and all that kind of thing. So, anyway, it's been much more positive, obviously, since then.
Let me pose one more question. And so if you think forward in the future, you know, you've been here, both of you, 25 years. If you think forward 5, 10, 15, 25 years, what do you pray that God would do miracle-wise or kindness-wise with this congregation, with this church?
I don't have the wherewithal to think that far ahead. My prayer for Grand Parkway has been this: God, just do in and through us whatever you want to do. And I think the answer to that is the same thing he's been doing since day one here. I'm going to put you in a place to tell Fort Bend County, the most diverse county in the country, I think it is, about me. You're going to make my glory known. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's our kind of our mission statement, to help people know, enjoy, and glorify God. That's what I think he's going to do. Because I think if you'd have looked at 25 years ago and said, hey, folks, we're going to have a building for the students. We're going to have a building for kids. Oh, that sounds good. But how about we get to tomorrow where I don't have to set up in a cafeteria? And so right now, what I think is, how about we just get this new sanctuary open and then let's see what's next. Yeah. But our command, our theme, our motivation has not changed. How do we help people know, enjoy, and glorify God? And I think that is what's going to be obviously our continued theme. And that in itself is going to be the miracle. And so that's how I'm praying. Tommy's much better at vision and long-range planning than I am. Tommy, what would be your answer to that?
No pressure there at all.
Tommy, what's the future legacy of Grand Parkway? What do you pray it is? I mean, you remember you said before about standing on the fence line and praying over this property. Mm-hmm. What do you pray for now?
I'll tell you what strikes me about our church the most. And I'm one of these kind of guys. I went to my first church for 28 years, and then briefly to another one, and for about 10 years to another one. And this is again one of the longest ones. So not a lot of church experience, but I've studied a lot, and I know people in other churches. And I think the thing, if I were to just say, what's the legacy of our church? And that is that we faithfully teach the Bible. Mm-hmm. We don't get caught up in a lot of the trappings that a lot of churches do. One of the things that I am really, I was obviously a lot more vocal about it when I served on the elders than I am now, but it's let's let's find the one or two things that we do and do them well. Let's not try and do everything that church is trying to do. The school was a perfect example. A lot of good Christian schools, but you don't, you know, let's be a good church first before we try and take on too many of the things. And so to me, I want people, when they hear about Grand Parkway, to be, this is where you come to get real solid biblical teaching. We have another church in the community that's larger than ours, and they're sort of what is called a seeker-sensitive church, seeker-friendly church, and they're well known for their very top-notch worship music and that kind of thing. But and we have people that come over from there, and it's like, well, we didn't get this kind of depth of teaching over there. It was great. Mm-hmm. We had great fellowship, great great worship, but the teaching wasn't what it is here. Yeah. So as a teacher, I am real proud of how of the, I don't know what I would call it exactly, the roster of teachers that we have. I mean, every class is manned or womaned, if that's a verb, by people that are really excellent teachers, people that I would love to sit under if I weren't teaching myself.
Who are handling the word right and handling people right.
Exactly right. And so I want people to think of Grand Parkway that way. Mm. Now, one of the things that I think is kind of interesting, Wade mentioned a little bit, I think a minute ago, is the diversity of our community. When we came here to, I was just telling this story at the Romeo's meeting the other day. When we came to the school and joined, we had a friend of ours who's a black friend, and we invited him to the church, and he came to the church, and after the thing was over, I went up to him and said, "Hey, well, what'd you think of the church?" And he goes, "Pretty white," and it was true. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having any race in our church, but we didn't look like the community. We looked like a white church.
A diverse county did not look like a diverse church.
And of course,
church.
We weren't quite as diverse then, but now when you stand up in that stage and look out at the congregation, you see God is bringing the nations to our area, and we have a church that looks like our community. And I don't think there's anything really better you can say about a church than that people come and they don't walk in and feel sort of automatically excluded or feel awkward about being there. And so that's one of the things I'm most proud of about our church is we really have taken that on as a vision.
Well, Tommy, Wade, thank you so much for sitting with me for a little bit and regaling some of these things. I know persons like myself who are newer to Grand Parkway, we don't have these experiences. And it's good to hear what did God bring us through and how is it different than when it started out. I want to thank you for listening. And if someone came to mind who would benefit from hearing this conversation, encourage them by sending them a link to its content. If you have heard a few of these episodes, do us a favor and give us a 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts. This makes us feel good, but mostly it makes the podcast easier for people to find. Also, if you have suggestions for other stories, you can contact me, Blake, at grandparkway.org. These are the stories you've missed.